Gal at Kislev, Wednesday the 30th of November, Rabbi Svi Belovsky, Gal Age, and the Mystery of Aramaic.
Good morning. At the end of the parsha, there is a rather mysterious passage describing a pact between Lavan and Yaakov. I'm interested in the Loshen. And now, let's come, we will make a covenant, I and you. And it will be as a testimony. This is, they finally, the broigus is sort of over at least, and they're making a decision that they will come to terms with each other's aspirations, and they're going to make a pact, and as a symbol of the pact. Vaikach Yaakov Oven. Thank you. Yaakov took a stone. And he erected it as a monument. And Yaakov said to his brothers, which means his sons, Liktu Abonim, gather stones. This is now having made the monument. And they took stones. Vayasu Gol, and they made a pile. Vayichlu Shom Al Hagol, and they ate there on the pile. Vayikroloi Lavon, this is the key posuk. Lavan called it Yigal Soaduso. Let's leave it untranslated. This phrase is clearly Aramaic. The Yaakov Korolo Gal Aid. And Yaakov called it Gal Aid, which is clearly a certain simple reading, a contraction of two words into one, Gal Aid, a pile that serves as a testimony. Vayim Lavan Hagal Hazer. And it continues, Lavan said, I'm not going to read the rest of the passage, this pile, Eid Beinu Beincho, is a testimony between me and between you, Hayom today, Al Kein Koro Shemoi Gal Eid. Therefore, he named it Gal Eid. There are many difficulties with this passage. I mean, we already discovered, for example, that Lavan called it Yagasa Dusol, and now he's calling it Gal Eid, which is the name that Yaakov gave it. We may or may not get a chance to deal with that detail. I'm primarily interested in the previous posuk, which is Menzayin, in which Yaakov names it Yigal So Aduso in Aramaic, and Yaakov calls it Gal Eid. Now, the difficulty of words of this sort, there are various ways of dealing with it. There is a famous mimer of the Shulah Kodesh, which says these words are all Hebrew. He's particularly interested in Totophos, which Rashi, based on the Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin, seems to suggest is a composite word from Kofti, from Coptic, and an African language, each of words meaning two, to put together a container with four compartments. And the Shulah says, it's not really this composite word. What the Gemara means to say, it's really an ancient Hebrew word, it's a word whose meaning has got lost, and is so unfamiliar that you can only detect and understand the meaning from the Roshan that's left in other languages. That's a well known, and one presumably, although I believe that he doesn't refer to this example specifically, presumably you could say the same kind of thing. But it's more difficult in this case, because Gal Eid, there is a name for it already in Hebrew, and it seems that Lavan and Yaakov are adopting different names for it. In the first paragraph of Masechta Soferim, there's a discussion about this, about is it Targum, what exactly is. Here's a midrash which seems to validate that this word is certainly not a Hebrew native word. So those who write references down, it's midrash Rabbah Ayin Dalad Yud Dalad. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman, Ali Hei Lashon Parsi Hazeh Kal Beinecho. Don't let Persian, whatever Persian means, presumably means Aramaic here, don't treat Aramaic in a trivial way. Because you can see throughout Tanakh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu apportions honour to this language. And here's the example from Torah, Yigasa Duso. So the Midrash clearly indicates that it's not a native Hebrew word. It's not an indigenous word. And Rashi, in fact, offers something which is perhaps not especially helpful, but rather obvious at this stage of the analysis, which is Yigal So Aduso, says Rashi, Targumo Shel Gal Eid. It's just the Aramaic translation for Gal Eid, offering any context, explanation. presumably, the way Rashi reads it, is that Lavan speaks Aramaic. He's called Arami Oved Ovi, at least in the Haggadah that's understood to mean Lavan. Lavan is an Aramean, Arameans speak Aramaic. And so since the Torah is reporting the words he used, rather than just the narrative, it uses the very word that Lavan used, was the Egal Sarduso. That's presumably what Rashi means to say. And in fact, the Radak, who doesn't always go the way of Rashi, validates this explanation. Each named the same thing in his own language. Lavan b'lashon Arami, Egal Sarduso, and Yaakov in Hebrew, Gal Eid. So that is a kind of, if you like, a standard view from Midrash and from basic Rishonim. There's a discussion of Rabbeinu Bachya about a particular perspective, Lavan bringing to bear some kind of idolatrous perspective, and by the gal, the double gal, he means Sanko gal gal, he has some kind of understanding that the constellations are responsible for the direction of his life. I'll leave you to look at that. It's the Rabbeinu Bachya on the relevant posuk. I want to momentarily wind forward to the 19th century grammarians. Now, in the 19th century, people are particularly interested in this type of thing. This is a bigger topic. But the Meforshim, and particularly the Ksava HaKabbalah, that's Mecklenburg, whose work the Ksava HaKabbalah was published in the 1830s, and the Malbim, who are writing later, are writing what we would call responsive Pirush. Meaning, they're not just kind of looking at the text in isolation. They are responding to a challenge, the challenge that Enlightenment and the development of reform have posed, meaning that by the time they're writing, certainly by the Malbim, and you can see it already in Ksav HaKabbalah of Yaakov zu Mecklenburg, that the validity of the Torah Shebaal Peh is under siege, and not only that, biblical criticism is suggesting, Chas v'Sholom, that the Torah is not written by one divine author, but a composite text. And this is just the type of thing that those critics love. Look, it's got, you know, the editor couldn't even manage to get rid of the Aramaic. And so you can imagine why, for the hundreds of years between the period of the Rishonim and the 19th century grammarians, it wasn't that exciting. Suddenly it's important to them to get something more out of it. Sometimes they say so, sometimes they don't say so, in order to refute critics. So, briefly, because this is not the main direction of what I'm going to say, but if we look at the Ksav HaKabbalah, he has a certain perspective on this. I've become recently very devoted to the Ksav HaKabbalah, and I strongly recommend it. Even in that very, he has a very odd, the original print in a very odd-shaped book, this kind of slightly long, with huge unbroken blocks of Rashi script. It's still good, even in that edition. So he offers a suggestion. Korav loyma deloy havenichel el Yaakov b'sheisha korav lavan yigal sarduso. Yaakov is standing there, and Lavan calls it yigal sarduso, and this bothers Yaakov. He knows what it means, and he understands that that means that Lavan has seen this episode or this monument through a particular lens. We all do that. There's lots of interesting ideas, Sharim, and all sorts of things about this, the way we use language. But he sees it through a certain lens, meaning his perspective is brought to bear on the way he describes it. And there is an element of ambiguity in this name. This is Mecklenburg's claim. So he says that the word Demashmusa Gamkein Lishnam Demi Isusa Inyan Hanif Vaznus. He says, Yaakov, with his extreme sensitivity, detects in the name Yigal Sarduso not simply an Aramaic description of a pile of stones that's a testimony to the pact, but also niuf. How does he justify this? Immorality. The targum noif isha mandigayan etaso loisinof. Loi tahave gi uron. So he finds in the Targum to Psukim dealing with sexual immorality this kind of gimel resh root. So Yaakov, with his sensitivity, does not want simply to consent to the use of this name, because whether or not Lavan intends it, Yaakov sees in it a duality and ambiguity that will later be interpreted to be his consent. He says, no, I want to call it Galeid. I want to have a pure Hebrew name. which may convey technically the same idea, but in fact strips it of any ambiguity. That's the Ksavah Kabbalah's explanation, to try to explain why it's significant, and therefore, according to him, the narrative is simply saying, Yaakov called it what he saw, and Yaakov's sensitivity meant he would call it different. It's obviously an attempt to deal with this problem this way. Now, the Malvim, before we move on, has a completely different spin on this. He, with his grammatical brilliance, something which I certainly would have never noticed, and perhaps none of you would have noticed either, is he says that Yagasar Dusa is not, in fact, the Aramaic translation of Galeid, which means he's quoting directly on Rashi. He says Yagasar Dusa is plural, and Galeid is singular. Rashi seems to say just one's a direct translation of the other. And I won't read it all, because I want to read some of the other texts I have here, that the Malbim understands, again, like the Ksavah HaKabbalah, they reflect different perspectives, but from a totally different angle. Malbim says that Yaakov is not inherently concerned about Lavan. At this moment, there's a concern they should at least part their ways without some kind of attack. But after that, as he says, when he goes back home, he doesn't feel any need to perpetuate this concern. Whereas Lavan sees the need for the pact as a long-term objective, a long-term monument. It's really for Lavan rather than Yaakov. Lavan uses it as an end. It's a long-term monument to their pact. Whereas Yaakov is using it as a means to get away from Lavan, after which he doesn't need to have anything further to do with him. And so the Malbim says this explains why Lavan sees it from a plural perspective, and then Yaakov renames it. The correct translation, according to the Malbim, is Lavan in his language called it Yigasar Dusa, which means a pile which has a plural testimony for now and the future. But Yaakov says, no, it's just Galeid. It's a testimony to now and not to the future. And that might also explain, it's not for now, why it is that Lavan then recalibrates his own understanding in the light of Yaakov's reading, and he calls it Galeid. It might deal with that problem. But you can see, and I just try to give some background as to why the Malbim and the Ksavah HaKabbalah feel a need to dig into it so deeply where the Rishonim don't. Because it's a response. If I'm allowed to say that, I'm not allowed to say it, then you won't invite me again. Okay. Now I want to go on an entirely different track, because I promised in the title of the Shia that we're going to consider the mystery of Aramaic. We haven't done any of that so far. So far, the first half is just to consider what the classic Mephoroshim and the 19th century Gomerian do with the difficulty raised by the presence of the Aramaic, and I've mentioned the Shulah Kodesh in passing as well. Now, in the Sefer Chanukah HaTorah, the Rebbe Rishchai Peschel, he quotes an entirely different perspective on this inyan, based on the Galia Raza, which is not a sefer with which I'm very familiar. I do have on my source sheet here the original text in the Galia Raza. I'm not even sure I got it from. But we'll look at it inside the citation in the Chanukah HaTorah. This appears in Dvorim, because I think he's considering Arami Oved Ovi Vayirib Mitzrayimot. The passage in the Chanukah HaTorah appears there. So let's see, what does he have to say? Zelashonoi. Bishvil Shehevi Yaakov Avinu Lashon Targum BaTorah. Yaakov Avinu brought the Targum into the Torah. Meaning somehow or other, one needs to be cautious how one says this, there's a criticism implied. That Yaakov Avinu is responsible somehow or other for bringing a non-native, impure, some kind of alien word into the Torah through this episode. It says, Bishvil Shehevi Yaakov Avinu Loshen Targum BaTorah, Lavan Kori Yigasar Dusa V'Yaakov Kori Galeid. That's the pasuk. Okay, Bishvil Kach Bo Yisrael BeGolus Mitzrayim. This is why they have to go to Golus Mitzrayim. It's a very, very strange idea. It seems to be saying, this is the quote in the Galia Raza, that the pasuk is Arami Oved Ovi. The question clearly is, why are we calling him an Arami in the context? Just call him his name. There's a whole load of ambiguity. It's not entirely clear who the Arami or Yaved, what that phrase means. There's a three-way machlokes for showing at least about what that phrase means. And then it says Vayeb Yisrael, some context, some connection between him being an Arami, being some kind of Aramean, and going to Mitzrayim, and that's what the Ganyu Razi does with this. So what are the kind of stuff? How does he explain this? The Yesh Loimal, the Zesh Omar Kosov, the Parshas Vayeshev, and one could explain in Vayeshev, coming soon, Vayesuei Nehem, and they lifted their eyes, who's this talking about? The brothers of Yosef. Vayuru, and they saw Vehine Orchas Ishmaelim Bo, what's the next word? Migilad. They came from Gilad. Right, this is the place they're coming from. Gilad, of course, although it's not said the same way, and the Nakudas are not the same, Gilad obviously means the same. Well, you can, maybe Gil is not a palm, maybe it's rejoicing, but whatever, it's the same. The Chamstat Shemesh says, you know, they're coming, Bo Migilad. What's he saying here? This is the moment when the promise of a Golos in Mitzrayim first begins to manifest itself. And where it's coming, Bo Migilad. It's coming. There's an echo of Gal Eid. Where's the origin of it? That's what the Chanukah Zotero says, is the pshat in the Gal Yeraza. It's the very, very interesting and unusual ideas. So what's this? Lahoyrid Mitzrayimo, to take him down to Egypt. By which he means, and I'll paraphrase the rest of the Chanukah Torah. So they saw he was coming from Gilad. The Torah somehow is hinting, not just that this Orchas Yishma'elim, this wagon train of Arabs is coming from Gilad, but that the thing, if you like, conceptually, this descent to Egypt is arising from Gilad or Gal Eid. Hel she Yaakov hevi Gilad stroke Gal Eid loshem targum b'Torah, and that's why, as he says, Yosef had to go down to Egypt. And he continues, remembering he's explaining the pasuk in Devarim in Parshas Kisavai. That's why it says Arami Oved Ovi via Mitzrayim, i.e. to say that because of this, because my father brought Loshen Arami b'Torah, not reading as I said, Arami Oved Ovi, my father, Yaakov, was responsible for something, made a mistake, or whatever, however you translate it, with the Arami, with the Aramaic, and therefore, I had to go down to Egypt. That is the thing. And he said, he gives a little pshekel, which you can use at your Seder next year. He says, that's a pshat, onus al pi hadibur. Right? Onus al pi hadibur is that once he allowed the dibur, as it were, of Galed, Yegar Sa'adusa, to appear in the Torah, he was forced by that process to go down to Egypt. So it'll come pshekel for the thing. I think it's quite far from what Chazal intended with the text. But it's a very nice, little vault to stick on at the end. So that's one thing. That's one, a very curious and unusual thing. We need to go deeper, because that's a very nice idea, that we need to go deeper. Now, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Lamed Ches. Omrav Yehud Omrav, Odom HaRishon, B'lashon Arami Siper. Odom HaRishon spoke in Aramaic. As we're going to see, a common interpretation of this is it means after the Chet. Not in his pristine original form, where we assume he speaks Lashon HaKodesh, which is the purest way of communicating, has the words that most accurately describe entities, actions, and therefore is closest to the mindset and the lens through which a Kodesh Baruch Hu wishes to see the world. But afterwards, after the Chet, it's very significant to read it like this. Now, the remaining sources are Rabbi and Ivershitz and the Yaros Tvash, and Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. We're really all over the Shaykh. You have a shir in which you quote Ksav HaKabbalah, the Malbim, the Chanukah Satorah, Rabbi Yonatan Ivershitz, and Rabbi Nachman. What have they got to say about it? Right? He's got something. The Yaros Tvash says something extremely interesting. Quote a pasuk in Yirmiyah, which you probably know. Sorry, Ein Begilad. Is there no balm in Gilead? It's a verse that's very often quoted. Is there no balm in Gilead? That's how they translate it. In Rotha, in Shom, is there no doctor there, or no healing process there? So what's he talking about? Again, I'll paraphrase. Apparently, what he means is as follows. Who comes from Gilad? Who's the most famous figure of Jewish history to come from Gilad. Eliyahu Novi. Eliyahu Novi comes from Gilad. What's this? And he, as it were, is the kind of healer, you know, inviting for bris. He's the healer, and so on. What's that? So Gilad is about the place of healing. Okay? That's point one. Now he goes off into a bit of a Kabbalistic digression, but it's quite brief and it's easy to understand. In this conceptualization of the place of languages and their relative, if you like, worth, Loshon HaKodesh comes from the Eitz Chaim. It is, which means, like in layman's terms, it is a pure, godly, unsullied kind of conceptual language, which in its pure form expresses the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees the world and wants us to see the world. Okay? And that's why it's special. It's why it's specially associated with Eretz Yisrael and so on. Then you have, on the other side, Gentile languages. Well, there are different ways of looking at languages. I said there are sources which are very interesting on this subject. It's a different shear. There are other languages which have different sorts of roots and which do not express terms from a Kedusha perspective. And then you have Aramaic. Then you have Aramaic, which, as we know, I mean, this is not a kind of a study of languages, certainly has many similarities with Hebrew. It's a little question, because you probably know there are different types of Aramaic, and I don't know exactly what type of Aramaic they mean. There are different, as all languages develop, you will have noticed that Targumic Aramaic and Talmudic Aramaic are different from each other. They're different words. And again, Zoharic Aramaic is different again. But nonetheless, whatever he means by Aramaic in its early pristine form adopts some kind of middle position. Aramaic is Eitz Hadas Tov Hara. In that conceptual framework, Eitz Hadas Tov Hara means a mixture. It has both. It has good and bad. Just as it's normative to understand that eating from the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara internalizes for Adam and Chava a mixture of good and bad, and therefore they live as we live in this tension which has now been internalized between the good and the bad sides. But Aramaic is neither one nor the other. It's not Loshon HaKodesh. It's not what he calls Loshon Nechar, alien languages. V'hu bolol toivara. It is a mixture of the two. And therefore, Adam HaRishon, and now he gives his pshat in the Gemara, Adam HaRishon, after the chait, achar hachait, v'loshon aramisiper, he adds in the pshat, achar hachait, because he's living in this world, he hasn't gone over as well entirely to the bad side, but he's no longer in this pristine form, and he is in the middle. He has elements of good and bad, reflecting the fact that he's internalized this mixture of good and bad, and the way in which he sees the world, and the way in which he articulates his understanding of the world, reflects that. And that's what Aramaic is. He says in the Rebbe and Ibishtuk says, that's the Pshat in the Gemara. And therefore, He gives his little hut here. Where is Gilad? I must say, I didn't know. It's on the edge of Eretz Yisrael. It's on the boundary. Of course it's on the boundary. Look at the story. That's what it's about. I'm going to go this way. That's my land. You're going to go that way because that's someone else's land. It's on the boundary. Conceptually, it sits on the border. I.e. physically and conceptually, this episode is about this boundary line and what the nature of Aramaic is. Lovin, so what's the point of the story, then? Yaakov diber b'lashon HaKodesh, Gal-Eid. He calls it Gal-Eid. But Lovin, what is Lovin's intention? Once you have that kind of Kabbalistic perspective, then you understand that what is Lovin's intention in the story is by calling it this. What's he trying to do? By calling it Yagasa Adusa, Bikesh laham shichoy masitro masoavo v'korolei garsa duso. Meaning, his intention is, by setting it up in a particular way, it will have a certain spiritual aspect, a certain spiritual attraction, and it will draw, as it were, Yaakov, his world, Loshon HaKodesh, in his direction. And Yaakov says, no. We're not doing that. We're naming it Loshon HaKodesh, because that forms the boundary line clearly. Loshon HaKodesh means that's the line. You have no place over that line. You're on one side and I'm on the other side. Yugosa aduso is an attempt to subvert the purpose of the pact. As far as Yaakov is concerned, the pact is to draw a line in the sand. I'll go my way and you'll go your way. Not just physically, but conceptually. We will have nothing further to do with each other. I will not allow you to pollute my spiritual and family aspirations. And Laban's trying to slip in under the radar by calling Yugosa aduso to keep some kind of connection, which will give him the opportunity to retain some hold over Yaakov. Yaakov spots it, and he renames it Gal Eid. According to his Edison Eibershutz, that is the pshat in this maisa. To finish, we can see that Rabbi Nachman, if you're interested in Madura Kama Siman Yud Tes, and Lakuti Maran, clearly is familiar with this idea. It seems most improbable that he hasn't read Rabbi Edison Eibershutz. He's not familiar with the idea. Let's read it. He actually mentions it here once, and then the Likutei Halachos, which is written by his Talmud, referring to Rabbi Nachman's ideas, it's referred to again. The Ikar Shleim Shaloshan HaKodesh Eina Ela Al Yedei Shema Pinen HaRosh Shav HaTargu Manimis HaTov Shav HaTargu Loshan HaKodesh. The goal is that one somehow or other throws down the evil in the Targum. Now, obviously, what he means by this are the, if you like, the alien perspective on the world that it embodies, and elevate the good that is in it, Leloshon HaKodesh. So, you know, he has to think, he thinks in a quite a different sort of framework, but you understand what he's saying? That engagement with the Targum with Aramaic trappers, this has all kinds of ramifications. Why the angels speak in Leloshon Aramaic, why is it they don't understand it, why, all kinds of ideas about Aramaic. Our engagement with Aramaic is to live on that boundary line. That we're supposed to somehow or other recognise the negativity and push that aside, and recognise the places where it is being influenced by Loshon HaKodesh. Sha'al Yidei Zeh, Nishlam Loshon HaKodesh, because only through that can Loshon HaKodesh be completed. It's a very interesting idea, what I don't think I fully understand. Somehow or other, there are sparks of holiness, if you like. Some kind of Kedusha, which is native to Aramaic, and by engaging with it, we, as it were, attract them to our side, but there's a danger of that engagement, as there is with all such engagements. So now he goes back to our story. The Lovenu Arami, Shehu Arami Oved Avi, he is the Arami Oved Avi, the Arami who oppressed my father, Rok Soliyam HaKadusha Ali Dea Targum, he got a slightly different spin, clearly drawing him in some Eibershutz. What was his goal in using the Targum? Not Yaakov's goal to somehow extract the benefits, but and thereby elevate the entire thing, but to play and as it were, to use this word, yonic, it means to kind of draw, nurture, suckle from the negativity, and thereby draw Loshon HaKodesh into his world. This is a struggle of ideologies. The Yaros Devash and the Likutei Maran have turned the dispute between Yaakov and Lovan as to how to name this monument into a struggle of ideologies about whether the goal is to elevate the negative or to pull back down the positive. And just to finish, we're out of time. Al kein kora lo Yugosa aduso. That's why he named Yugosa aduso. The Yaakov hayomales atargon loshon HaKodesh. Yaakov was doing it the other way, to elevate the positive parts of the Targum. He means by Aramaic. Al kein loy, koraloy gal aid, beloshon HaKodesh. So to summarise, we've seen a kind of a journey. Rishonim treats it a particular way. The 19th century Gemarans have their specific concern against the backdrop that I mentioned. But if you delve into the more Kabbalistic sources, particularly giving the Rebbe Reb Heschel in the Chanukah Satorah, you see a train of thought that sees gal aid, Gilad, as somehow Yaakov, A, as responsible in some maybe unwitting or subconscious way for creating a need to go down to Egypt, this requires further discussion, or from the perspective of Yonason Iverson and Rabbi Nachman, this represents a struggle of ideologies. It represents the boundary line between two worlds, and each of them have a totally different objective in setting up the monument, and that is why they name it differently. Have a good day.